Morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Matthew, co-founder of Stigma Solutions. This is another episode of Stigma Solutions podcast. It's a San Diego business podcast series edition. We're interviewing Kristen from Saffron and Sage. This one really blew my mind. It's amazing to really get into the tactics. I've found that so many times coming away from a business podcast or something like that, you walk away with these ideas and these concepts of you need to create value or you need to reach out to people. But so often I walked away and didn't have anything concrete to really do the next day. And that's really what I was trying to do with this one, is ask questions in a form that were really concrete that somebody could listen to and go, okay, that's what I need to do tomorrow. That's something different that I can try. So this is my attempt to do that, and Kristen absolutely facilitated that in a beautiful way. So without further ado, I give you Kristen of Saffron and Sage. Okay, I think we're good.
Okay.
Even though it's echoey, even though it's whatever, I think people try to put so much emphasis on the details. I'm like, let's just capture something. So
let's do it.
Please introduce yourself, who you are, the business. I mean, anything around what you want people to know or about who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Kristen Smith. I am the founder and CEO of Saffron and Sage, which is a holistic health club located here in Little Italy, San Diego. And I am also the founder and CEO of Saffron and Sage Skin, which is our proprietary plant-based skincare line that we just launched.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm also one of the practitioners here at Saffron and Sage. I'm a spiritual director as well.
Beautiful. Is that the skincare? Is that new?
Yep, brand new. We just launched it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So I'm curious about your journey. Like, what was your first interaction with business? What was the decision around like, okay, I'm gonna start this. I'm gonna try my own thing. Have you always kind of been entrepreneurial, or was this first kind of like the world telling you that you needed to do it? How did it start for you?
Great question. Yeah. So I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. My dad owned his own construction business. My grandfather owned his own trucking company.
That's so cool.
And that was just the world that I knew. And so growing up, I knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always wanted to own my own business. I didn't know what. When I was in high school, I struggled with acne, severe cystic acne, and that was the beginning of dreaming about opening a spa, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't find any solutions, and whether I went to the dermatologist and tried the drugs, whether I went to the estheticians mm-hmm. and used all the chemicals, mm-hmm. nothing worked. Mm-hmm. And I thought there's got to be a better way. And so I had dreamed of a place that worked from the inside out, looking at what's going on with digestion and food and what's kind of surfacing, and then looking at what sort of topical skincare products could be used. And so it's interesting that here we are full circle, but that was the original dream. When I graduated high school, I wanted to live in New York City, so I got into all these colleges in mm-hmm. New York City without realizing that when I graduated, I was still 17, and all of the schools that I got accepted to all had off-campus housing, and you had to be 18 to be admitted into there.
Okay.
So I was going to have to defer. So I ended up looking for a new part-time job in town, because I was like, okay, I've got a little bit of time before I relocate, and I was recruited into the financial services industry.
Interesting.
Did insurance and retirement planning, investments, and all those fun things. And I was actually the caller that set up all the appointments for all the sales reps to go out and talk to everyone.
So you did cold sales?
I did. It wasn't cold calling, almost. The clients sent in leads that they were interested, but you had to call and schedule an appointment. But nonetheless, no one remembers filling out anything, right?
Right.
You get on the phone and it's in the evening or it's on the weekends and you're the last person that anyone wants to talk to. But I was like the queen of appointment setting. And so I was making, you know, well over minimum wage at that time. And interestingly enough, that was my first and only job interview. I went and met with the owner that night and was offered the position the same night and never had another job interview since, which is pretty funny.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I was I just loved chatting with people and so talking and connecting, and I think that's why I did so well. I was just genuinely interested in helping them. Mm-hmm. And from there they were like, you're so amazing, you need to come start being a rep. And I was like, okay, I'm 18 years old. Who is going to listen to me about investments and insurance and financial planning?
Right.
They're like, no, you're amazing with people. We're going to train you.
That's so cool.
And so they were after me for a long time. And I saw all these, you know, young guys are in their 30s and in 40s and getting these huge bonus checks at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They traveled all over. They got all these big trips that they want every year. And I thought to myself, this could be my cash cow to start my first business.
Sure.
And so I remember telling the owner of the company and my direct manager, I said, I don't think I can do this, but if you think I can do this, I'm all in. So I got licensed, and due to my birthday and getting licensed, I only had about 9 months in the year to kind of hit my goals and get started, and ended up being one of the top rookies, definitely the youngest, but the top rookie in the entire country for one of the oldest insurance companies in the country. So it just kind of grew from there. It got bumped up into management, and then was offered vice president of sales and marketing for that firm. And then my top producer and myself ended up starting our own brokerage house after that.
Wow.
So that was kind of the journey of how I got into my first company.
Are you still in that world at all, or?
Absolutely not. Nothing.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, we weathered the financial crash in 2008, even though our clients were not invested directly in the market. They didn't lose any money. People stopped investing because everyone else had lost their
money. That makes sense.
Right? And so we went from doing so well to absolutely nothing.
That was what 08 was.
Absolutely.
I think there was only a couple firms, like Bridgewater was one of them. There were only a couple that really made it.
Yeah. So we did make it. We struggled and we had to liquidate a lot of things to survive. We definitely made it. But by the time that, you know, 2010, 2011 was rolling around, I felt like I was like washed up on the shore of a beach after a shipwreck. I was like, I need to lay down somewhere and just rest. And that's what led to my sabbatical in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
So I sold my half of that company and the other company that we had together and moved to Mexico for a 6 month sabbatical. And
how old were you at that point?
I think I was 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
You started fast.
Yes. When you start your kind of career at 17.
Yeah.
So I joke that I had my midlife crisis at 25 instead of 45. So I got to fast track a lot.
That makes sense. That's so interesting. Yeah, I want to pick your brain a little bit about sales.
Yeah.
Because I guess, I mean, this is my predisposition, but I wouldn't guess that somebody, or I haven't interacted with many people in the holistic world or in the art world that are sales inclined.
Yeah.
And I think so many people struggle in that place of like, how do I ask for money? Is that something that's just been natural to you? Because it's like poison to so many people. They feel like they're being, it's for me, it was one of the things.
Yeah.
I was one of the shyest kids ever, and asking somebody for money or asking somebody for business.
Yeah.
Has always been something that, like, in, I know I can do, but internally has always felt like a struggle.
Yeah.
How do you feel like you approach it?
Well, I think definitely my background in sales, because even though I wasn't cold calling, when I went out to see clients, it was tabletop sales, which means I was meeting you for the first time, you and, you know, your significant other, and getting to know your finances, getting to know your health history, walking through and understanding intimate details about your life, and within an hour and a half, you were giving me your social security number, your bank account information, and writing me a check.
Wow.
And that,
sale.
Yeah, and it was 100% commission only.
Wow.
So working through sales and asking for things and, you know, closing and sharing delicate information and dealing with rejection, right?
Yes.
You know, when you start out and you're like closing very little, up until I had a 90-something percent closing ratio when I transitioned out of the industry. So,
my goodness.
Yeah, so I think I was fortunate enough to be trained in an organization that understood sales as service and understood sales is It's a transfer of emotion. And I think most people don't understand that. When we think of sales, we think of the sleazy car salesman, right?
Yeah,
you know, who
absolutely.
Oftentimes is transferring emotions like envy, or, you know, when we're thinking about bankers or normally people in the financial services industry, we're thinking about greed, right? Is the emotion that they're transferring. And I think being in the context that I am in now, we're transferring emotions like peace, mm-hmm. right? And for me, that was also the emotion I was transferring in financial service. We were talking about what happens, you know, to a housewife when your husband passes away tomorrow and he's the sole breadwinner for your family.
Yeah.
That income goes away. This is something that none of us want to think about. But if we take the time to sit and ponder what would happen and implement the necessary measures so that if one day this worst case scenario happens, she has the financial wherewithal to survive and start over again, right?
That makes sense. It sounds like you reframed it a lot. Like the frame that you put it in was that you were truly giving something to somebody, or expertise or knowledge or a strategy that was going to help them.
And I think that's the first thing. You can't sell anything that you don't believe in.
Yeah.
And so everything that I was talking to them about, I had. I had my living trust. I had a retirement plan in place. I had, you know, savings plan in place. I had insurance, all of these things. And I believed wholeheartedly and I was all in. So I think you need to first have that level of integrity before you invite anyone to an idea, to purchase a product or a service. And same thing with Saffron and Sage. This place was built for myself.
Yeah.
And so it's very easy to talk to my clients about the value that we offer here and talk to them about our products and services, because they have a problem and they are asking for the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the questions of can they afford to embrace that solution at that point in time is a whole different story, but that's none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
My responsibility is to make recommendations for what's going to be in their best interest. And it's then up to them to make a decision.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It seems like that scenario is in a place where it's like you have leads, or you have people calling you. Have you been in a position where you had to, like, you were cold, you didn't have the traffic, you didn't have the crowd, and you had to go, and you know, you're in that place where you don't have people asking for you yet, you have to ask them. Have you been in that position?
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly being in financial services and showing up and knocking on people's doors, but I think, you know, and this is true, I think of any endeavor that you see, all of a sudden you hear about a company a lot and you're like, oh my god, they're here and they're there and they're doing all these amazing things without realizing how many years they've been hitting the pavement before they got to that point between everyone knows about them, right?
Absolutely.
And so Saffron and Sage was no different. When I moved to Tijuana for my sabbatical, it was a few months in when doctors found the tumors rapidly growing in my neck and my thyroid.
Oh, wow.
And that kicked off my wellness journey. And so my journey was centered around finding solutions for myself. And so I was reading and researching and reaching out to different places and practitioners and things like that. And as I was finding solutions to those health concerns, you could see the visible difference in me, and people began to ask. And I think, again, that's the first rule of sales, is that if you are focused, if you actually have a product or service that is good and you're using it, people are gonna see that, right? Like, we have clients coming in and asking about our skincare products because I use it. They see other clients that use it. So when you have something that works and you can visibly see a change or a difference, you don't need to run out and try to peddle something, so to speak, right? And I think, you know, with Saffron and Sage, I didn't set out to start a company. I was trying to find or create a path for my own holistic healthcare. And because of the results I got in designing that for myself, people came to me and said, well, what do I do?
Right.
And I think that's really the most organic way to begin. And so from there, I was faced with asking, okay, well, how do I pay it forward, right? How do I give back to individuals that were in my space? That's, you know, it's lonely, it's scary, it's exhausting, it's expensive, trying to navigate this alone. And from that place, people kept asking, well, what about this? What about that? And so those kind of consultations turned into doing educational and social events. And from the educational and social events, people began asking, well, when can we come into your space? I'm like, we don't have a space. And so I think during that process, between when we got a space and kind of paying it forward, was really the time when I was doing market research. That research and development process was really about seeing, okay, I have a small group of people asking for these things, but is this is there a larger demand? Is there a larger need? And that's at the point when we started, I started being really intentional about marketing and offering these things and seeing, is anyone else interested besides the kind of relationships and the friends of friends and friends of family that started reaching out? And that was a process, right? And that's when we started being intentional about social media, with Facebook, with Instagram, with our blog. We had a website before we really had anything to offer. The first thing that we offered was events. And so I think it is challenging. And it's really about getting clear on who you are and what you're offering, whether that's a product, whether that's a service, and figuring out who are you talking to? Yes. Who are you trying to help? And so for me, I was trying to help myself. So interestingly enough, the clients that ended up being drawn to Saffron and Sage were the ones who were just like me. Other leaders in the community, entrepreneurs, executives who were burnt out, who were fatigued, who were experiencing chronic conditions and illnesses and disorders that were emerging. And this was creating constriction and inability to fulfill their leadership role in the community, to an inability to fulfill their vocational role to themselves, right? Of stewarding the gifts and strengths that they had.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to bring it back to, you said something, hitting the pavement. What is that like at a granular level? What does that process look like for you? What is it calls? Is it DMs on Instagram? Is it door to door flyer? Like, how, what does that process look like for you, if you're willing to share?
Yeah, right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, perfect example with
If you could, in the beginning, sorry to interrupt you, but if, like, in the beginning before there was the, there was a crowd, like, what does that look like? And then, and then now, how is it transitioned, or how does it look?
Yeah. So in the beginning, it was being intentional about curating conversation on social media, engaging with the tribe that was growing around Saffron and Sage, having conversations with the individuals that were attending events. I'm trying to think back how we even were... I think it was just on social media and going through and inviting friends, inviting people that we knew lived in the area. And that was a big part of that process. It was primarily social media. And then we were sending out our newsletter. So it was all around content creation and getting that in the media channels of where our target demographic was at. Hitting the payment, what else are we doing?
In those pitches, was that straight up, do you want to buy my thing? Like, this is who I am. Maybe, was it mostly people you knew already, or was there some cold outreach too?
I think it was less, there was a little kind of cold outreach, but mostly, you know, for instance, in the early days, we were partnering with Vino Carta, which is still a neighbor and still a partner that we work with. And we needed space. We didn't have a space. And so I reached out to these guys and they said, hey, your place, you know, could probably benefit from more people coming into it.
Right.
We could benefit from having a space where people want to go and a beautiful environment where, you know, let's talk about collaborating. And that created an opportunity to say, would you also post this? Would you also invite people? Would you also champion this class, this workshop, this event? And building those relationships, I think, is the essential part of hitting the pavement. It's finding out where can you create a win-win relationship.
Yes.
And for, you know, Vino Carta and for ourselves, that was a win-win. We brought people in who had never been in Vino Carta before, had people who were regulars of Vino Carta that had never heard of Saffron and Sage before, and created beautiful events where they curated the wine tastings, and the wine list, as we talked about plant-based medicine, right? And so I think hitting the pavement is asking yourself, who do I need to be in relationship with in order to further my cause?
That's good.
And finding people who share your vision, who share your values, right? Obviously, being a boutique curated wine bar, they share our vision for organically grown, biodynamically grown, you know, fruits and produce in general. And so there was a shared mission there, right? And so I think it's all about asking yourself, who do I need to be in relationship with? Because building a business, building a life is all about the relationships that you're constructing.
Absolutely. How do you go about that? How do you go about building a relationship? So say that there's somebody you want to do business with or somebody you want to sell to, or what is your thought process around how do I get their attention? How do I serve them? How do I give to them? What does that look like for you?
Well, I think perseverance is the key. Okay. Like, we stalk the heck out of people. Like, you know, if it's a brand, we are liking every post on social media, sending out messages, calling them, emailing every email that we can find, showing up at their place, like asking, I will ask anyone, like, do you know anyone who, you know, is involved with this organization, this business? And, you know, I it's really about perseverance and putting your feelers out there and not being afraid to send. I've sent cold emails. Like, hi, I'm Kristen Smith. I'm the founder of Saffron and Sage. I love what you're doing. I love this and that. We have this really great idea that we'd love to talk to you guys about.
Yeah.
And sometimes they write back. Sometimes they don't. We have some brands that we've been pursuing for a year, and then they finally show up and are like, oh, we've never heard of you guys. We've never seen any of those emails, any of those messages.
Yep.
And it's about timing, right? But it's really about, and I think the other thing is telling people, even if it's not someone that you think has these relationships, I talk to people all the time about what my needs are and what's going on.
Truth.
Friends, family, whatever's happening. Money, we need money. We need, you know, our neighbors. We have a whole boatload of flowers sitting here. We, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we talk to people constantly about what we need, and things show up, because if people don't know what you need, they can't help you.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how many, I'm thinking about my attorney, for instance. Our in-house counsel is provided by Duford Law, and Kelly Duford takes care of everything for us. Kelly and I were introduced by one of our members here at Saffron and Sage, who's also another business owner, Chanel Sinego. And through that, you know, Kelly has really saved us in so many ways and stepped in and took taking care of things. And this woman answers emails at 10 o'clock at night, at 5 o'clock in the morning, is texting, calling with myself and with our staff, is on vacation, is on the weekends taking care of things, because we have built a deep relationship, you know? And in above and beyond, I won't tell you all the things that she has done for me and for Saffron Sage,
right?
Because people are gonna be asking for the same thing. I don't wanna put her in that
no,
place.
No, I understand.
But, you know, even our, I'm thinking about our CPA. When I moved to San Diego, I was looking for new professional partners, like our attorney, our CPA, and I interviewed a bunch of attorneys, a bunch of CPAs, and this woman in particular resonated with me, and I thought, she's the one. She is going to be a strategic professional partner that's going to help us build. And at the time, I couldn't even afford to pay her whatever she was charging, right? But knew that she was the best. And I remember when we were in early stage fundraising, because I did not have all the money that we needed to get started, and knew that I needed to proceed anyway. So I have a really fun fundraising story that comes along with Saffron Sage, but it was in our early days, and I was putting out feelers and actually had an offer from another leader in the community, and it was not a favorable one for me, but at least we were getting the dollar amount that we needed in order to keep going. And I sent over the contract to Debbie, our CPA, and to our attorney, and Debbie happened to be the first one to see the email, and she called me and she said, you can't accept this offer.
Wow.
And I was like, what do you mean I can't accept the offer? And she just ripped it apart and said all the reasons why and you can't do it. And I said, well, I don't have another option. Like, I need this money like yesterday. I have to take this. And she goes, no. And I'm like, well, what do I do? And she goes, how much of that do you really need? I was like, all of it. I need all of it. Yeah. And she goes, well, I can't afford all of it, but I'm writing you a check right now for a third of it. And that's going to buy you enough time to come up with the rest.
That's amazing.
Whose CPA is giving the money?
Yeah,
nobody's man. CPA. And twice she's written me a check.
Yeah.
Twice.
What do you think was the function of that? Well, how do you think that came to life? Her willingness or want to do that?
Well, one, I think I am completely transparent with our staff and our professional team and explaining, because I think people don't, they can't make decisions unless they understand the big picture, unless they understand everything that's going on. And so from the very beginning, I sat down and explained where we're at and along the way, explaining what challenges we're facing, what's going on. And I think people connect to that. I think people, I mean, this business, we could have a whole day's discussion on the blessings and the like miracles that has built this company, because as much as I'm a girl of perseverance and hard work, and you know, I've got some brains behind me, but beyond that, there's no way. It's all financed by miracles.
Yeah.
But I think people care when they see someone doing something that is taking everything they got, that is so tied to their story, tied to their journey. And I think my story and my journey has compelled people to want to get on board because they resonate both with my pain and my struggle. You know, my CPA has some major health issues that are going on. And in fact, our entire board of advisors has all had major health issues, from chronic conditions to cancer. And so they identify with my story, they identify with my journey, and they identify with what we're trying to do here, because like me, they need this place to exist. And so I think that has fueled people's desire to get behind us, whether that is cash or gifts in kind, to support. And I think to any entrepreneur, you know, this business is very personal to me. And I think sharing your story of the why, you know, you think of Simon, what's his face, that wrote the book,
Start With Why.
With why, right? And so that's Saffron and Sage is all centered around our why and my why. And I think that has compelled people to respond in really powerful ways that I am indebted to, you know, their good graces and their favor. But
absolutely. There was another question that I had about perseverance, in the sense that I think that a lot of people, we have a really low threshold for when we think that we're bothering somebody. We have a really low threshold for asking somebody, I don't want to bother them, I don't want to annoy them. And I think a lot of people think that they're bothering somebody way before they've actually bothered somebody. So do you have kind of like a feel around like when you know communication is appropriate, or when you feel like you've gone too far, like in outreach or trying to reach somebody? Because I think that in actuality, it comes down to like, they didn't see the email, or they didn't see the voicemail, they didn't see the text message, but you see they didn't respond to it, and you go, oh, they must not want to talk to me. How do you navigate that?
Well, I think that comes from, my advice to anyone is go get a sales job.
For sure.
Go get a sales job. And that rejection, that, you know, the self-doubt of why didn't they respond to me, they don't like me, they didn't buy from me, you know, all of the narratives that we construct around why, you really have to stay in the present moment and suspend all of those judgments about things. But you have to build thick skin. And I think sales is one of the best places to build thick skin. But I think the question is, one of my mentors, and this was in our first year, sat down with me, and again, it was about money, right? Because I've had to raise money in our initial, year and a half, every day, every week, every month.
Wow.
To survive.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend that to anyone. That's incredibly hard and will cause a heart attack. But I think, you know, my advisor had asked me, he goes, if we're sitting down a week from now after you've had to file bankruptcy and close the doors and going over the list of everything that you could have done to survive, because you're going to be filled with regret on that day, filled with regret. And what are the things that you're going to tell me of what you could have done
in
order to make it happen?
For sure.
And he goes, so you need to call everyone who you could possibly think of who can help you get to tomorrow.
Wow.
And do you know that day was a Sunday? I sat down and I wrote an email on a Sunday to neighbors, clients, everyone who had a vested interest in myself, in this place, in the community, asking for money.
What was the phrasing, how did you present that?
That we are in our, you know, finishing up our first round of fundraising, and you know, we're shy about $50,000, and I'd like to present you with the opportunity to get involved to help, you know, something along those lines. And do you know I raised $50,000 in 24 hours?
Wow. Wait, no, that day?
That day I had two responses to my email from, actually,
it's amazing,
two members of Saffron and Sage who said, I knew when I met you, the first one said, I knew when I met you, you were an incredible leader. And she's retired. Business professional, also in the financial services industry, and she said, I would absolutely love to write you a check, and for, she did about half that amount, and said, I think what you're doing is phenomenal, and if all you need is a little bit of money to get to Next Way, sign me up.
Wow.
And so she, it's funny because she happened to be coming in later that week for an appointment, and so I said, should we just meet before, you know, your session and get the check from you? And she goes, absolutely not. I'm going to the bank first thing tomorrow morning so you can go deposit the funds and put that money to work.
That's amazing.
And so she did. And the other was a couple who are incredible leaders in the creative space in San Diego, and said, we are so sold on everything you're doing here. Our lives have been so transformed by your work, and we happen to have a little bit of cash sitting around, and we love to be a part of what you're doing.
There's so many. That blows my mind. You can't predict that.
You can't predict that. You cannot predict that. And that was so hard for me to write. But
how many did you write? How many emails?
A lot of emails. I wrote a lot of emails.
Hundreds?
And I was mortified. Yeah. I was absolutely embarrassed to write that email, and particularly to clients who I had had conversations with or knew of their, you know, commitment to business and community development and to San Diego and the city. And I was like, how embarrassing that I'm asking my clients for money.
Right.
And my one of my other advisors said, are you kidding me? He said, no, those are your shareholders. Those are the people who are most committed to what you're doing and darn well want to see you succeed. And when I step back and I think about the businesses to where I go, you know, I have friends who own a Turkish restaurant in Tijuana. When I lived there, I ate there about three times a week. I don't want to see them go out of business. They have phenomenal food. It's my favorite restaurant. And so if they asked me in any way, shape, or form to help them, I absolutely would, because I want them to make it. I'm thinking about Kettle and Stone, my favorite coffee shop. Mm-hmm. You know, if she has to raise her prices, I'm gonna pay 50 cents more or a dollar more because I love that coffee shop. Yeah. I wanna see her succeed if she needs anything else. And I think we have to take that step back, because when it's us, we're
absolutely.
Ew, it's icky, and you're asking for something and it feels like you're indebted to them.
Yes.
And I think this is the other thing. We talk about pricing and sales and money. It's all about an exchange. And I think something that the phrase that I used when I was doing a lot of nonprofit new venture consulting was this idea of a dignified exchange. And I think that's what happens here at Saffron & Sage. It's what happened when those members invested in Saffron & Sage. It's what happens anytime, even what you and I are doing right now. There's a dignified exchange taking place. And I think when we look at the service that I'm offering, it's valuable. Yeah. It's way more valuable than the $175 ticket that the acupuncture costs here, right? And you know, when our cancer patient walks through the door and experiences the level of care and the relief that they get from different symptoms and battling, you know, this disease, it's priceless at that point, right? Yeah. So at that point, I think understanding what are we exchanging?
Yeah.
What's happening at this point? And the price tag is, there's a really, really great book on like the psychology of pricing that I'll have to look up and
yeah,
share.
Yeah, I love it. I love
it. But you know, it really gets to you know, what is our framework and our philosophy about money, right? We all have different stories around
Absolutely.
Money that are really valuable to look into. And I think in this profession, we talk a lot about that because we have a lot of practitioners who are in, you know, the healing arts,
yes.
the caretaking profession. And it feels uncomfortable. And so we've done a lot of really strategic things around pricing, around exchange of money for services to make it a very comfortable process for everyone involved. Like, we don't accept tips here. We don't believe in tipping. And we believe that when you get out of a class, out of a treatment, whatever sort of multi-sensory healing experience here, you shouldn't be thinking about money. You are in this
That's
peaceful
so good.
State. I don't want you to whip out your credit card or your cash. I want you to go home
yeah.
and go to bed and take a nap or go out with a friend or whatever it is. I want you to maintain that state. And as soon as you have to start thinking about anything, money in particular, you're taken out of that state. This is also why we collect payment at time of booking, because when you arrive, you shouldn't have to think about money. The only thing you should be thinking about is preparing yourself for the experience that's about to happen. That's it. It should be about the mental, physical, spiritual preparation for entering into that sacred space. And we're member-based here because, you know, we believe that you should have affordable access to holistic healthcare. So we try to discourage people from paying our most expensive prices.
Yeah.
We want you to become a member. And so that's why our pricing is discounted heavily for members. And it's also designed because we know that if you're consistent with your self-care practices, with your holistic healthcare offerings or experiences, you are going to regain or maintain your well-being.
Sure.
And so we want to incentivize you to achieve the desired result. And so all of that has been strategically designed.
Yeah, that's so intentional.
And it's in the best interest of the client.
Yeah.
It's in the best interest of the organization.
Yeah, that there seems to be a why behind every single reason why you have a price set or where you
yeah.
take your payment.
In all those years before this physical place existed, I can't tell you the number of hours I spent what I call visioneering,
yeah.
mapping things out. I have notebook after notebook, and as you know, being in my office,
yeah.
whiteboard after whiteboard covering the walls of thinking through all of these experiences, the details. I mean, the page that I'm most proud of on our website is our etymology page. It talks about the meaning and the essence behind saffron and sage and the meaning of those words and how
that's so good.
That meaning drives everything that we do here.
That's so good. We are, how deep are we? 36 minutes. I think we can wrap up a little bit and give you a little time. The last question.
Yep.
I'm picturing the person that has the idea. They've set up the structure, so they've gone and done the work of getting the business license or creating the product or doing they've done the logistics on the back end,
yeah.
but they're struggling to get traffic or they're struggling to make sales, and they're in the hole a little bit because they've bought some inventory and they haven't been able to sell it, and they don't have a crowd ready to go. who do you think that person should talk to? I mean, this is somebody in their house that's trying to sell their art, something like that. But they have the structure set up. They just need to go to market and ask people or network. What do you think that process looks like?
So before they do any going anywhere, they need to get very, very clear on who that product is for. Mm-hmm. Know your avatar. Mm-hmm. Know everything about that person. So our avatar, we call her Kimberly. Mm-hmm. And that's because our very first member, her name is Kim. And our experienced director, who started out as a member, her name is also Kim. And then one of our investors, she's also Kim. So these three women embody the very essence of the woman that we are trying to serve here. And we have on her, we have a whole page where we write down where does she shop? What does she value? What does she spend money on? Where does she save money on? What does she like? What does she not like? How old is she? What does she do for work? What's her dog's name? You need to get very, very clear on that. And
how do you feel when people say everyone? Like, this is for everybody.
Yeah, I struggle with that because, for instance, even Saffron and Sage, holistic healthcare is for everyone,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But in essence, we're not intentionally communicating with everyone about Saffron and Sage. We're communicating with one type of person, and it doesn't mean we don't attract other types of people, but we are very clear. And I think it's like dating, right? It's not that you're not open to different types of, for myself, sure, different types of guys,
yeah,
but I have an idea.
Yeah.
I have, of the type of guy that I'm looking for. And so I'm going to say no and, carve out my kind of energy for a specific type of guy. And I think same thing here. And so we are communicating with women who are leaders, who are executives, who are entrepreneurs, who are sick. And again, this woman looks very much like me because this whole space was designed around me. So I think that's where you need to start. You need to sit down with a big whiteboard and really see. And I think oftentimes, this is the dance, because the product may end up changing a little bit.
True.
Service might end up changing a little bit because Kimberly might say, well, have you thought about this? That's exactly how Saffron and Sage started. I wasn't thinking about this space. We had clients come and say, well, great, these events are amazing. Now we want to come in and see these practitioners in your space. And I'm like, we don't have a space. And they thought, and they said, well, you better create one. I thought we were going to be the Yelp of the wellness world. I thought we were going to go in and vet all of these different places.
Wow.
and put our stamp of approval and rate places about cleanliness, about, efficacy, about, especially in the world of complementary medicine where things like energy therapy don't have a governing board in the state of California, right? So that was my thought. I thought we were going to have curated city guides and all of that fun stuff. And no, these Kimberlys kept saying, this is what we want. And I was like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
So it evolves. And that was really a conversation between myself and our clients. And so I would say, do you have anyone? So before you start dumping money into social media or going to events or doing things, start with who you know.
Mm-hmm.
And give them out for free. I did our consultations for, we still do our consultations for free. I was doing consultations for free before I did spiritual direction for free when we started out, right? If you can't give it away for free, then we have a problem. So I think you need to start with the relationships that you have around you first and seeing who resonates. Is it all of my friends that are in their 50s that resonate with this product? Is it only my guy friends that resonate with this service? Right? Really looking at those things and getting and soliciting honest feedback. You have to, again, back to the thick skin thing.
Yeah.
You have to ask people for their honest opinion to be ready for them to tell you. And I did a lot of that in the very beginning, and people saying, well, I don't like this. This doesn't make sense. This isn't going to work, or blah, blah, blah. But you have to take it all in and you have to listen. And so once you've done that and you're very clear on who, then the question is, where are they at? So perfect example for Saffron and Sage. Kimberly is, she does staycations in San Diego. She likes to go out to the cool rooftop bars downtown. She likes to eat at places that are conscious about the food that they're serving, whether it be farm to table. So again, as I talk about Vino Carta, it makes complete sense that they are a strategic partner for us. The Ondas, the Guild, Carte, the Kimpton Hotels, those are all partners of ours. And guess what? There's nothing but Kimberly's hanging out at those hotels. And so as we build those relationships, now we are talking to a whole bunch of Kimberly's because they are the hotel guests. They are having a drink on the rooftop. So figuring out where is your target demographic spending time? Where are they spending money? That's how you need to forge relationships and going about it often in an indirect way, right? Mm-hmm. So we're building relationships with the hotel, not Kimberly, with the hotel and allowing the hotel and us together to communicate and design something even better for her. Mm-hmm. So, and I think same thing, is Kimberly on Instagram? Is she on Facebook? Knowing, you know, those things is really, really important. Where is she getting her information? Mm-hmm. Is she reading blogs? Is she reading magazines? You know, and then figuring out how can you get her ear?
Yeah.
How can you get a sit down with her? And that sit down might be, like I said, at the bar at the Kimpton Palomar. Mm-hmm. The sit down might be reading a blog on the Chalkboard Mag or reading Condé Nast magazine.
For sure.
And so once you figure out how to get her ear, then you can figure out, okay, what strategic partners do I need to bring in
sure.
to begin starting a conversation and starting a relationship. And I think Jasmine Starr is one of the best people. She's photographer turned social media
yeah.
coach person. She was here speaking when we hosted the Confetti Conference in 2018, and she was so phenomenal. And I was just listening to one of her things the other day, and she goes, where in the world do you go and just start talking about yourself and not asking questions of anyone else and expect them to write back?
Yes.
And that's what we do on social media,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Hey world, I'm Kristen. Yes. This is what I have for breakfast and this is what I do all day long. Mm-hmm. Okay, you should like my post and come buy my
yeah,
stuff.
Come do something for me. Yeah.
People don't care about that.
Yeah.
They want to build a relationship, even online. They want to build a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you have any tips around phrasing or pitching? Like somebody leaves this conversation, they're like, okay, I'm ready, I'm gonna go ask somebody. Do you have any strategies around the way that you ask somebody or the words that you put into that actual message?
Pain.
Ooh.
You need to share your pain.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. When I was sharing, you know, at every step of the way, I need money. Okay, great, everyone needs money. Don't we all need money, right?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And what was my pain point?
Yeah.
I was trying to provide something that I didn't have the money to do. And I think understanding how lives can be changed and what they can offer is so valuable. And a lot of people, like I remember people in the meeting, they didn't know my story. And so you have to be willing to lean into the discomfort of sharing your darkness, your suffering, your pain, because that is what people are going to latch onto.
It's the only thing we have in common.
It's the only thing.
Everybody has that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're going to find those specific people of how your pain matches their pain. You know, and so whether it's another business owner who was like, oh my God, I was in the same place when I started my business. I didn't have enough money and I wish somebody, you know, did that for me. So they want to do that for you. Or, you know, one of our board members had in her early 40s, they found cancer in her thyroid. And she, hardcore workaholic, amazing entrepreneur, phenomenal businesswoman, and here she is killing herself, literally. And, you know, saying, I want to get behind this because I want a different life for myself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want to be a part of supporting Saffron and Sage. It was her way of holding herself accountable. I mean, I could think of a number of different ways to hold myself accountable besides supporting another business venture. But for her, that is being involved in the business was going to allow her to hold herself accountable to regaining her well-being and setting her life on a different trajectory. And it came from me sharing my story.
That is, I didn't expect that answer.
Really?
Yeah, not at all.
I've never heard,
yeah, well, I mean, that's what everybody says is make sure when you're pitching somebody, you're offering more value. Like there's lots of
answers. We don't have a pitch deck.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We tried to create one in the beginning and it took too much time and it was overwhelming and everyone wants to see something different. And I was like, oh, the hell with it.
Yeah, so it's just transparent story. This is what we're doing.
Transparent story. Here's where we're at. And when you get, if you're talking about money, you're going to get there and need to share financials, right?
Right.
But there's no point in sharing financials first, because if you're looking for investors, you don't want someone who's in it for the money. And in the very beginning, I turned down a lot of investors who wanted in for the money.
Yeah.
And we have people who do knock on our door and want to get on board because now they see what we're doing and now they want a piece of the pie. And I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. One, because if I was in it for the money, I would have stayed running my consultancy where we made an absolute fortune and I lived very, very well. And you know, this is not about the money.
Right.
And I think that's why people get behind it. And I think it's also when you're starting a business, I think if you can build a business that's built around your story and your strengths, it makes a world of difference instead of just building a business for the sake of making money. You do need to make money and it is important.
Yeah.
But if that's the only reason you're here, I don't think it's going to lead to a quality of life that you're looking for.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but I think you have to share your story.
Yeah, that's a beautiful point to close on. You want to add information where we can find you, what you do, like a little closing plug if you'd like.
Sure. So come visit us. We're in Little Italy, just outside the flight path, and. Yeah, come down and say hello. Come get a tour of our space. Come in for a complimentary consultation. We'd love to meet you. You can follow us on social media. We're at Saffron and Sage US. Our skincare line, you can follow us at Saffron and Sage Skin. And the website for our space is saffronsageliving.com. And I think that's it. I would just say, come down and say hi. And we have a blog. You can sign up to receive our newsletters and special offers on our website. So do that if you haven't already. And follow us on social.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of success with people who have been able to step outside the traditional medical path and be able to just get into, because this place is very lifestyle based and it's very, you're approaching it in such a complete way, and I've seen such a benefit in people that I know who have been able to get into something like that and experience that. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's it.
Cool. Thanks. That was fun. Yeah. I can go on tangents talking about
stuff. I wanted to be respectful because I want to give you a little time before we shoot the video, but we could talk. I mean, you taught me a lot in that conversation.
Cool.
You really did.
What was your biggest takeaway?
That last bit. I mean, it's so interesting. Sales is something that I've always struggled with, but I've always wanted to be the person to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So it's always been this uphill fight because I was this really shy kid that was intimidated by teachers, and that's always stuck with me. So asking for money or asking somebody, like calling somebody on the phone 3 years ago for me was the scariest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Getting somebody on the phone and being like, hi, this is what I do and I'd love to chat.
Well, I think we have to reframe rejection.
I've had to reframe so much.
And you know what? I go back to the dating reference because I talk to, I have this conversation with women a lot. And they feel like, oh, he didn't call me back. Mm-hmm. He didn't ask me on a second date. We broke up, he ended things or whatever. And not that it's always men ending it with women, but in those circumstances. And I'm like, so what's the problem?
Yeah.
And I'm like, the success metric is you being with someone who likes you, who's attracted to you, who wants to be with you.
Right. It's better to find out earlier.
And if they're not, that's a win.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can move on to somebody else.
I agree.
You have to have that reciprocal win-win relationship.
Yeah.
And if it's not, it sucks, right? It totally sucks, especially if you were interested. But you have to cut your losses and move on. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, flipping the script, you want to we are very intentional here about qualifying people. I don't want everyone and their brother to come in here. I don't. And the reason why is I want to work with someone who has very specific vision and values. And so if those things don't align and people don't come in here, we have people who are like, no, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to take things seriously. I wasn't ready to commit. I wasn't ready to give things up. And they don't come in.
Yeah.
And it's not because we're not hospitable and amazing, but they don't come in because they know this is what we value. Mm-hmm. And here you have to be ready to take 100% responsibility of your well-being in order to get results. And that's why the clients who are here are getting tremendous results, because they're taking that responsibility.
Right.
So I think reframing rejection and I understanding you what you want and what they want. So if you're picking up the phone for someone and it's just about what you want, like we get people that email us all the time, will you carry your our products in your boutique?
Yeah.
And oftentimes we say no, because their products are not in alignment with our values. Mm-hmm. They're not in alignment with our philosophy. So it's not a fit.
Yeah, I agree. I'd say similar things to guys. It's funny how it comes back to dating, because it's like guys are trying to get girls, but we live in this culture where with social media or dating, everything's about what can you do for me? Like, can I have your number? Do you want to go on a date with me? Will you like my page? Will you buy my thing?
Yeah.
You're not taking a second to be like, well, I wonder what they need. How can I help them? Like, how can I just give them what they need? No expectations. Just like, hey, I thought you might need this. Can I give this to you?
Yeah.
And just don't do it. Like, now you have to purchase from me. Yeah. Just do that. And it's something that I've done for guys. Like, dude, if you want to get, like, actually think about where she's at in her life. If you want to get her number, like, think about where she's at in her life and how can you help her? What she's interested in? What does she value? Take a second. Don't just ask for, like, that's the part that gets me. We live in a culture where everybody's expecting somebody to do something for them.
And that's okay, right?
Yeah.
Like, we need to get our needs met. That's okay. It's about where is that match happening?
Yes,
what you need and what I need, how's that fit?
Absolutely.
I'm reading Uncontainable right now. It's the story of the Container Store.
Okay.
And they are one of the, like, models for me as far as a business, and you would not think it, but they are one of the most successful companies in the country. They attribute their success to culture, and they pay way more than all of their competitors. They're, you know, just all these amazing things. And one of their kind of culture cornerstones is filling the other guy's basket. And they talk about their relationships with their employees and their vendors and how they go above and beyond to take care of them, because they know they'll be taken care of. And it's this idea of what's in my best interest is in your best interest.
Absolutely.
So I can be as selfish as I need to be, because that taking care of myself is only going to be better for you.
Interesting.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
And so again, it's figuring out those people.
Yeah.
Where are the relationships going to be a win-win? Our hotel partners, what do they want? They want people coming into their hotel. Mm-hmm. So what do we need? You know, we want to do fun and cool events, and we want to have Kimberly have these amazing experiences. It's a win-win.
That makes sense.
So it doesn't matter about, you know, are the hotels or all the guys out of my league or all the girls out of my league, right? It, all of those things don't matter, because it's you're meeting a need. And I think you'll have more success when you figure out what they need and just go after those people. Mm-hmm. Because if, like, the people that, you know, are selling stuff that has toxins in them, instead of calling places like Saffron and Sage, they called other places that sell toxic things, they'd have a higher success ratio, right?
That makes sense.
They'd have a higher closing ratio.
Boom. That was the podcast with Kristen of Saffron and Sage, and I personally took so much from this. You can find Saffron and Sage pretty much anywhere on the internet. If you Google Saffron and Sage, Sage. If there's something you'd like to hear, I hope this interview filled the niche that I'm trying to fill with these issues of looking at micro things and having people be able to walk away with tactics of, like, okay, that's something I can try. That's something that worked for them or didn't work for them, and this is something I can do different. If there's something you'd like to hear, please feel free to reach out. My personal Instagram is Matt Byrne, at MattBurnOwo. The podcast production company is Stigma Solutions, at stigma.solutions. I hope you found value, and I thank you so much for your time and your attention.
Until next time.